Empire.
Hello and welcome to my podcast. Do me a favor, subscribe to the John Kahn Report wherever you get your podcast. You're watching on YouTube, hit that like button, hit that subscribe button. You can find us there as part of Empire Media. That's A-M-P-I-R-E. Always much appreciated when you tune in. And don't forget, you can always read my work on ESPN.com. We'll have another story about the upcoming draft in a couple of days. So look for that on ESPN.com. There is a press conference on Thursday with Adam Peters and Dan Quinn talking about the draft, of course. And today, I will be joined by Matt Bowen, former Washington Redskins safety, as we discuss a lot of topics. Yes, we talk about the draft, but not just the quarterbacks. In fact, we don't get to the quarterbacks until late the conversation. Wanted to ask him about what he felt about the Commanders' free agency period, how this defense, with what he knows Dan Quinn wants to do, how he looks at this defense right now with the personnel they've added. Went over a few guys in the draft, of course, and then obviously the quarterbacks, but I wanted to ask him about the quarterbacks from a defensive player's perspective. Like, what would concern you about some of these players, whether it's Drake or Jaden or JJ McCarthy? So, I think there's one guy that kind of scares you the most back there if you're a defensive back. Anyways, but I wanted to get into all that with Matt. But again, a lot of it is on the roster as well and what they did in free agency and where this thing is at right now. So stay tuned for that in 1 minute. Before I get there, a couple things. One, and I told you the other day that the Commanders are bringing all these players in and that they're going to have this fun little outing. Well, tonight, it's Tuesday night, Adam Peters and Dan Quinn and a bunch of the coaches took all the prospective draft picks over to Topgolf for an outing with that. Apparently, it's something that Adam Peters was part of in San Francisco. They've done it here. I thought maybe this was a Dan Quinn thing because one thing I know about Dan Quinn is he wants these guys to compete all the time. But this is a chance to see how they interact with one another and compete. And I think you can learn a few things, but it's also a fun thing to do. So I think there's things you can learn while those guys are out there having fun. Now, all the quarterbacks were there. And so initially, this gets a little bit screwy because initially we heard last week that Jaden Daniels would come in Monday night and visit there Tuesday, but be here Tuesday night as part of this event. And even heard that Monday too, but clearly he came in Tuesday and was going to be visiting with the other quarterbacks. They're going to be visiting at the facility on Wednesday, going through whatever meetings they have to do, et cetera. So they're all here together and there you go. Cause it was a little bit very uncertain. And this is one of the hard parts with this is to get all this stuff down, but the itineraries either changed or there was a couple of people there. Even when I talked to someone today, they said there was some confusion by some in the building over when these guys were actually coming in, because it's sometimes only a few people really know. So anyways, but they're all there now. And now this is the final step in the Commanders' evaluation process before they lock onto one guy in particular. And when that will happen, who knows? Because they know they don't have to settle on a guy until next week if they don't want to, or at least I don't know that they're going to tell us anyway. So anyway, but the event was there and, apparently guys had a lot of fun and there you go. So another big hire by the Commanders today. And I want to go over this a little bit. They hired Kirtan Mehta. And I think that's how you pronounce it. I apologize if I got that wrong, as a vice president of public affairs. Now I talked, his job is going to be, he's going to deal with policy management, a lot of things like that. He was brought here to handle complex negotiations. This guy was a chief of staff for Senator John Hickenlooper. So he's got experience navigating complex situations. That's why he was brought in here. And I know some people who know him. One person called him the cream of the crop. I think Josh Harris was impressed with him right away after his interview. I don't think it took him too long thereafter to offer him the job. And there were several other candidates. So this guy's a big deal. And another, is he going to have an impact on the football operations? No, but he's going to have an impact on the organization. And the one thing I always say, these hires matter, because when under the previous owner, you didn't always get guys of this magnitude, right? And I think when the more guys you have like that in an organization, the better you become. And I remember when Mike Shanahan talking to him about the 49ers organization way back in the day when he was an assistant coach there and Bill Walsh was there, and just talking about how, you know, everything was first class and everybody was, they felt was, hey, this is the best receptionist. This is the best this. And the more you have that, the more you feel like that, and the more it changes the organization. So another good hire by them. And he'll have an impact on the stadium search. And as one person told me, is, you know, the policy experience will help in a quote multi-jurisdictional stadium search. So that's what he's brought here to do. And it doesn't mean just because he was in the federal government, he's worked with a couple different in jurisdictions. So it doesn't mean that, oh, this is the sign they're going to RFK. The RFK thing is, somebody told me that the federal bill is mostly done. It's just a matter of getting it through. There's not a ton of work that has to be done on that bill in particular, but what will have to be done is trying to find the political capital in the district within the city council or whatever to get enough votes to approve more money for a sports team. And, you know, there are certainly some people who feel like the district can come up with the money that they want to. It just means you're going to have to shift some things around. And do they have the political capital to do that, knowing that you just gave Ted Leonsis a bunch of money as well? And then there's also Maryland, which can come up, you know, with if they can get more, come up with more money from than the district, that could do it. But even if they only come up, but it has to be by a decent amount, because you can make it up in other ways. And I think there's going to be some creativity that goes on here if that is where they want to go. So anyways, but this guy was a really good hire. Just follows yesterday with Dave Gardy coming on in his role to help with like in-game management, rules, etc. So anyway, there you go. That's it. No more need to talk about that. Here's my conversation with former Washington Redskins safety Matt Bowen. Trades, free agents, quarterbacks, and all kinds of adventures await the Commanders this offseason. Looking for an adventure of your own? The Adventure Park at Sandy Spring has you covered. The country's largest ropes course and zipline park, located in Montgomery County, Maryland, is now open. Named Best Amusement Park and Climbing Destination in the DMV 2 years in a row, the Adventure Park at Sandy Spring is perfect for birthdays, corporate outings, groups, and families. With challenges anywhere from beginner to expert, there is something for all skill levels. Anytime you're thinking about reaching new heights, make sure you know before you go. The Adventure Park at Sandy Spring is the only ACCT accredited park in Maryland or Virginia. Staying on the ground, give axe throwing a try. You can throw at traditional targets or play any number of interactive games. You can even upload your own image. So there you have it, folks. Climbing, zip lining, axes, food, and bonfires right in your backyard. Reserve your adventure today at www.theadventurepark.com/kime. That's www.theadventurepark.com/kime. Matt, it's always, always good to have you on here. And I told you before we came on here, I love the background. It's like his very classy background. And your response was?
Well, when you get cut three times in the National Football League, you start to collect a lot of helmets, right? So, yeah, I got a lot up there. But that's, you know, when you bounce around the league and, you know, get to experience different coaching staffs. Look, I always talk about my career, John, as I'm very proud of my career, that I survived 7 years in that league, that I made every team. You know, when I got cut, it was always after the season. Right. A lot of times due to injuries, and that's part of that game. And my kids always ask me about my career because they weren't born yet. And I always tell them the great players, one of the greatest attributes you can have as a player is availability, right? Because everyone in that league has a certain level of talent. Now, obviously, there's some players that have exceptional talent that are all pro players. But there's guys that play 9, 10, 11 years in that league that are really good football players, and they stay healthy. They're always ready to practice. They're always ready for an opportunity comes. There's those opportunities for someone like me, John, who's a sixth round pick for the St. Louis Rams. When you get those opportunities, you have to be ready to play. Yeah. Or else, guess what? You're gone. And they'll find someone who can take advantage of those opportunities.
I've seen that happen here. There were guys who were like mid-round picks. They get that shot their rookie year. They're not ready, and it just puts them way down. So, but the other thing is, too, because you played for multiple teams, multiple defenses, how does that shape when you watch games now? How does that shape your analysis because you have played in different systems?
Yeah, I was really lucky to play in different systems with great coaches. That's how I always see it. So Peter Gentile was my first defensive coordinator in St. Louis. Outstanding football coach. More of a combination style coverages. Really complex for someone like me as a rookie. Then my second year with St. Louis, we brought in Lovie Smith. Hmm. So when you're playing with Lovie, you know, that is more cover two based, more zone based, fire zones. I remember the first fire zone we installed and the type of practices we ran under Lovie. They were hard now. I mean, they were challenging in terms of, you know, and you know this, John, at every level of football, it doesn't matter if it's Pop Warner or Sundays in the NFL. Coaches talk about running to the ball, right? On defense, run to the ball. Mm-hmm. That's great. But Lovie actually did that. Like you ran to the ball on every single play. So, again, seeing Lovie's defense. Then I went and played for Ed Donatell in Green Bay, who I, you know, Ed Donatell is one of my favorite coaches and learned a ton there in terms of game prep. And then we have in Washington, you know, under George Edwards, young coordinator at the time with Coach Spurrier. And then Greg came in. And when Greg came in, Greg Williams, to me, that was, you know, a graduate school level course of football in terms of our defense was so complex in terms of how we adjusted, John. So if you have one motion, things are going to change. We're under Lovie. If you have one motion, it's not as much. It's more about read and react and play faster the football. Well, with Greg, again, things change like that. So in my last year in Buffalo, I was with Perry Fuel, who worked under Lovie here in Chicago. So again, then it all comes back, right? You're back playing cover two and some three deep, some fire zones. But it does teach you a lot, to answer your question. It does teach you a lot in how you analyze the game, especially from a secondary perspective, because your eye discipline means everything. Right. So where do you put your eyes? And that's the starting point for every defensive back. After alignment and assignments, where you put your eyes when the ball is snapped.
So now I want to get into the draft in a few minutes because you have a few pieces up on ESPN Plus from last week, especially the 90 traits, which I love that because mm-hmm. it breaks down every kind of trait imaginable for a lot of different positions. And one quarterback stood out to me for you in that exercise. But let's go back to these traits and all that because you've watched Dan Quinn's defenses, and Joe Witt's going to be the coordinator. He's mm-hmm. calling the plays, but this is a Dan Quinn defense, sure. And Joe Witt will put his touches on it and be in charge of it, but it's still a Dan Quinn-style defense. So when you look at that, like when you look at Washington's roster now and some of the moves they made in free agency, what did you think and of their moves and how it fits with what you know they would want to do here? And again, well, I always point out Dan Quinn's defense because we haven't seen Joe Witt's touch on it yet.
Right.
So we you know, so I just to be clear on that.
Yeah, but the core of the defense, like you said, is going to be what DQ wants. Right. And the greatest thing about Dan Quinn, because we always talk about this, right, John, is that how players develop, right? And how the growth they show and the growth pattern of their game, whether it's in practice, training camp during on Sundays. We don't talk about it enough with coaches. And that's my point. With Dan Quinn, this was back when I was doing the NFL matchup show at ESPN. When I first started doing the NFL matchup show with Dan Quinn, it was what? You know, your three deep coverage, your three match, your three buzz, your three deep fire zones. And look at how he's adapted to today's passing league. Now playing much more man heavy, playing more split safety coverage. And that's really, I keep saying this, but that's what the league has become. It's about the ability to hit the quarterback, to take away explosive plays, and to take the football away. Those things matter in defensive football to me. And when you watch with Dan Quinn, how he will scheme his pressure, how he will put a top on the defense to take away those explosive plays, how he will utilize a lot of different, you know, versatile parts in his defense, right, John? Because you're going to see more dime personnel. You're going to see six defensive backs in the field. Guys that come on the field exclusively to match up with tight ends and man coverage. Defensive backs who have multi-dimensional traits like a Jeremy Chinn, right? Someone you add there who has the size of really a box safety, but has the footwork and the ability to pedal and play over the slot and blitz off the slot and get to the deep half, has ball skills. Now you put him in this style of defense. Well, that's why you sign a player like that, because you think, well, in our defense, with the talent we have around him with DQ's core system, that he can become more of an impact player in our system.
And what about like, when you look at there, was there any moves that stood out to you in free agency of the guys they brought in? besides Chin, talking about Chin, but anybody else who really jumped out to you about the guys on defense that they brought in?
I'm pulling up right now, John. Well, obviously at the second level, we know what they did there, bringing in Wagner, bringing in Luvu, guys that have that second level range, have that, you know, football intelligence. Especially someone like Wagner has a football intelligence to where he's seen everything, right, John? And when you have someone on your team that's seen everything, I always go back to playing with when I was playing with Antonio Pierce in Washington.
Oh yeah.
Okay. And AP, the greatest thing about AP, one is leadership on the field, obviously, but also how he would see things and what a communicator he was. And we don't talk about that enough, right, Jim? But we are so focused on traits, right? And I'm guilty of it too. We're so focused on traits. And maybe we'll get to that. We talk about a player like McCarthy, but talent and traits, right? Well, there's other things in the football field. You need on-field leadership. You know, the great defenses we had under Greg Williams in Washington, it was because of players like Antonio Pierce, because of guys in the secondary like Sean Springs. These ultimate communicators, not just get you lined up, but tell you what's going to happen, right? Because they're so prepared, almost over-prepared for Sundays because they study so much tape. They have instincts that you can't really teach. So when you bring in players like that, it really helps your defense to grow in general, more so than their fit in the scheme. It's what they do for your scheme.
Right. And I think, you know, even with Wagner at his age, can still play, but that is an invaluable trait to bring.
It is.
I think the impact on other guys can be, because Antonio, you know, you always hear like there are a lot of people back at the time, and maybe you would agree that his impact on LeVar was pretty big because of that ability to communicate.
It was. What was impacting the secondary too? I mean, he was really good. And I've had a luxury of playing with guys like that. And my first year in St. Louis with London Fletcher, my last year in Buffalo with London Fletcher, ended up, you know, finished his career with Washington. You know, Fletcher was like that too.
Yeah.
You know, and look, what's the thing here that tells you don't have to have these elite traits, right? For the draft, it matters. We know that. That's going to really impact your draft positioning is what type of traits and talent. Height, weight, and speed, no different than high school recruiting, right? But when it all starts to play out, the guys that have the intangibles, is the way to say it, defensive intangibles, since we're talking about this side of the ball, really, really take control of your defense. Because, look, you can have the best coaching in the world, and I've been with some of the best. Those coaches aren't on the field with you. You know, it's like I tell my players at the high school level, look, we're going through this throughout the week. I'm not going to be able to stand out there on Fridays. Okay, so who's going to be the leader of our secondary? Who's going to be the one that gets everyone lined up and gets everyone prepared based on your pre-snap keys, your down and distance, formation, personnel, game situation, yard line you're on? You have to know all those things. And players like Wagner have done it for so long that they know what's coming next.
What do you think of Luvu?
I liked his tape a lot. I liked how they utilize him too in Carolina, you know, second level blitzes, which you will see under Dan Quinn. The thing with DQ is, they will, when I said earlier, John, they'll scheme their pressures. Okay, that's a pretty broad term. What I mean by that is they're going to get a guy like Luvu a free run to the quarterback. They're going to have inside picks with him looping around, right? They're going to get him an interior matchup versus a guard where he can use that athleticism and those traits to beat a guard in space. And he's got the second level range to cut off the football on the perimeter or drop in zone coverage. And look, he's in a match underneath too. When you talk about a linebacker in man coverage, we're not saying you got to match up to McCaffrey, right? We're not saying that. You're not going to get 80 snaps versus McCaffrey. What that means, you can wall off number three in a crosser. You can carry the seam and deliver that seam to the safety. All those things matter within the terms of your defensive structure, and he has the traits to do that.
When you look at this draft, who are some guys like, you know, there's an interest in guys like Chop Robinson and guy like that. If, and I don't know that he'll be available for them in the second round early. But who are there some guys in this draft that you look and say this would be a good fit in a Dan Quinn defense?
You mentioned Chop. That's obviously a very good one. Let's just talk about him since you brought him up. Chop Robinson is an interesting player too, John, because I don't know where he's going to go in the draft. If you look at the mocks, even the mocks we do at ESPN, sometimes he's in the 15 to 20 range. Mm-hmm. Sometimes he's the top of day two. You don't know. But Chop Robinson is electric off the football. That's the best way to describe it. He is a flamethrower off the edge. That's how much speed he has coming off the ball. And what that does is that immediately, think if you're an offensive tackle getting into your pass, that immediately impacts you. You get pressure on your edges now. That forces you to open your hips too early. It forces you to kick back too far. Now it opens the door for an inside move. Excellent pursuit to the football, okay? Because we talk about these pass rushers all the time. Again, I'm guilty of it, but They don't throw the ball on 80 snaps. So you got to do something else too.
Right.
And guy like Chop Robinson can pursue the football. You throw a screen outside, he's going to get there. He's going to get there fast. He can tackle in the open field. And with DQ's defense, you think of someone that has that upper level athleticism to where if you're bringing a zone pressure, you can drop him. Okay. And again, when you drop someone as an edge defender in the zone coverage, again, you're not matching up in man. You're owning a space. Can you get to the proper depth, close the window and feel the window behind you, force the ball underneath. Now I can use that athletic ability to drive downhill, take a cutoff angle and tackle in space. That's a player that you look at there that can do that. I'm pulling up my, we talked about my top 90. Okay. Right. Things I did. And I'm looking at guys that would fit. You know, look, at someone that's interesting to me, he might go to higher, but, you know, a true edge setter is Darius Robinson, a defensive lineman from Missouri. Anyone who was down at the Senior Bowl got to see him live. I've watched his tape. Just extremely physical at the line of scrimmage. Something that – and you need this, John, in your defense. And I've heard this from every coach I've played for and successful coaches at the high school level. If you can't set an edge to your defense, you're not going to win any games.
Right.
You're not. You need – sometimes you need – that edge setter, you know, interior off defensive lineman, if they were to go that route, Newton from Illinois, I really, really like. Someone that plays with exceptional juice off the football has got, you know, a lot of developed counters already, plays at high energy level. And that's the thing to look for here, John, when you're talking about DQ's defense, players that have that energy level, that, you know, play hard all the time. And again, that sounds high schoolish. I know that, but if you're going to play in this defense, you're going to play for Dan Quinn. Like we were talking about earlier with Lovey, you better run to the football. You better run to the football at an exceptional rate, or you're not going to play for this man. You're not. So when I watch the tape, too, and that's probably the coaching side of me now, but I want guys where every play matters to them. It matters. And that's important to study.
And, you know, it's funny because, like, one of the things that stood out to me with Luvu is the dude kind of goes, he's an energizer bunny out there. In addition to, I think he has some good skills, but he certainly plays that style. What about a corner? When you look at just traits of a corner that should fit this defense, what are you looking at?
I think you need to have both. Okay. So traits of a corner to me in this defense is obviously the man coverage traits. Okay. Both press and off the ball, the ability to pedal and transition in the football, but also the backfield vision to when they do bring their zone pressures, or they jump into quarters or three deep, or they roll down to cover two. I want a corner that, I use the term backfield vision. What that means, John, is you can stay on top of the route and get your eyes inside and read inside to the quarterback. You know, that allows you to play two to the zone. That allows you to make plays on the football where you don't get your eyes solely focused on guy driving inside an in-break, and guess what? They run a wheel behind you in your beat. Okay, you got to have that backfield vision. Also, you got to be, in my opinion, to be in that defense with Dan Quinn as the secondary player, you have to be urgent. Urgent in your movements, urgent in your play style. I want tone setters back there. Tone setters. Hmm. You know, people will come up and tackle. And look, you don't need to be Steve Atwater. You don't. And younger people listening probably don't even know who I'm talking about.
No, I do.
Yeah. Steve Atwater was my guy growing up with Steve Atwater. Big when time, he was on Monday Night Football, that's what I wanted to watch. He was a safety for the Broncos. And go to YouTube. Now, this is the homework for the younger guys out there. Go to YouTube, search up Steve Atwater, Christian Okoye, and watch the hit from Monday Night Football.
Yes.
Okay. But my point is you don't need to be Atwater. Okay. You need to be willing tackler. You know how highly I think of Fred Smoot. Okay. Fred Smoot is one of my favorite teammates ever. And Fred wasn't Steve Atwater, but Fred would get you on the ground. Okay, that's the point. Are you willing to tackle on the edge? You're willing to use that physical element when necessary. And also, you know, I think, John, with this defense, you want corners that got ball skills. Okay, like we talked about the top. Take the football away. You want corners with ball skills. That's what DQ had in Dallas. When you looked at Diggs and Deron Bland, those guys take the ball away. And not only do they take the football away, what happens? They turn into offensive players once they get the football in their hands. They're looking to score and flip the field. We talk about two things here, John, that stand out to me. The urgency, overall urgency or tone-setting ability of the defense in terms of their effort level and their energy, right? That allows you to make up for mistakes. You can take a false step. You can have a poor angle. But when you got multiple guys running to the football, it doesn't matter. You're going to get someone to make the play. The other thing is takeaways. You can have a couple of plays where you give up some plays, but guess what? You start taking the football away, now you're in games. I look at what the Bears did last year, the second half of the season, they played better football here in Chicago. Still at the offensive struggles, but they're taking the ball away so much week in and week out. And usually, if you have, you don't need the best offense in the league then either. You need an offense that can score points for you when you give them those opportunities. And especially if Washington's going to have a young quarterback, one of the best tools to have, and we don't talk about it enough. We're always saying, well, they can add a wide receiver. They can add a tight end. They can add – what about a defense?
Yeah.
It sets him up where he's got short fields to work with. And he knows that the defense is going to get him stops, so he's going to get the ball back, whether in a two-minute situation or another red zone situation.
How deep do you think this draft is at cornerback? And I ask that because when you look at their top 30 visits, and I know it doesn't tell everything, but a lot of the guys they seem to be looking at aren't necessarily like second round types. I know they've talked to guys like that, but what if they waited till the third round or something like that? Can you still find a guy that can be a solid corner in this draft?
I think you can. I think you can. Now, some of the guys I really like, Lassiter out of Georgia.
Yeah.
Look, if I'm, let's be honest, if I'm drafting defensive backs, and I know I'm a little biased here, but I'm going to Alabama, I'm going to Georgia, and obviously I'm going to Iowa because of Phil Parker, because of how those guys play and how they prepare. So Lassiter out of Georgia is one I really like. Didn't test extremely well at his pro day. Are we still talking about that stuff? I mean, in 2 weeks, it's not going to matter, okay?
Right.
And that's the problem with the draft, too. Again, I always use this term. I'm guilty of it, too. But we look at the stopwatch positions, wide receiver and corner. Well, did they run a 4-4? Well, if they didn't, you'll find out in camp if they could play.
Right.
You'll find out in camp if they can open and run and they got recovery speed and they got transition speed down in the football. But Lassiter for Georgia is one for me because he played in a pro-style defense at Georgia. He tackles. He's physical in coverage. He will create on the ball production in terms of getting the football out. Rakestraw from Missouri is one of my favorite. Just in his competitive play style. Now, he's going to have to adjust in pro football because he is he's a little bit too physical. Okay, what I mean by that is physical at the line of scrimmage is great, but physical within the route stem, as we know in the right. NFL, they're going to get you. But he'll learn that stuff. And look, so there's going to be some Sundays when he can get away with it. My favorite things that Joe Gibbs did is every Monday, really Wednesday morning, we had our new week of practice after the Tuesday day off. He would present the refs and say, this is what they call. This is what they don't call. As a defensive back, the first thing, do they call defensive holding? How often do they call PI? And as a defensive back, if they didn't do that stuff, you're saying this will be a good week for us now.
Yeah.
We can grab a little bit. We can be physical. We can push at the top of the route. We can grab that. We can lock onto that hip a little bit. But those two guys to me that I don't think are, I'm not necessarily certain, John, where they're going to go. But the reason I brought them up is they're not being talked about enough, in my opinion, because they don't have elite measurables. They don't have elite speed, but they are really good football players. And I think once you get outside the first round, that's my focus. I want really good football players that have versatility in terms of their coverage ability, versatility in terms of their alignments, and that will make plays in the ball, that will tackle, that will help build a physical brand for this secondary.
You like what this team has done so far in the offseason?
I do. I think they've been very aggressive. They've added a lot of players. Obviously, it's a complete change because you're talking about a new general manager, a new head coach, new coordinators. And look, I've gone through that in Washington. There will be some transition time for that. And it was easier for us, John, and you didn't see it right away. We went 5-11 our first year. Defensively, played real good, but it was easier for us because we started in March.
Right.
Remember that. Now, we started back in March. I want to say like the second week of March, we were back in Virginia.
Yeah.
And there were also no rules back then. So you could practice every day and just call quarterback school. Just make up names. Okay, we're going back in the field for 2 hours.
Joe loved the no rules stuff.
Yes. So did Greg.
Yeah.
And I thought we were very prepared. And obviously you didn't see the results right away. The second year he did and went to the playoffs, but that's the transition part for this football team. It's gonna have new voices. A new terminology, a new playbook, a new way of teaching, you know, and coaches that are different. Look, the thing as a player you got to understand is, and coaches have to understand this too. You're not going to coach every player the same way, okay? And every coach is different. You know, a guy like Lovey, for example, was very, very calm all the time, you know, where Greg was very urgent, very energy, okay? And there's different ways to teach, and you have to get adjusted to that, right? You gotta get adjusted to that. No, what are they trying to get out of me? What am I not doing right for them at this point? Because you're not going to do it right the first couple of days. And what do I have to fix? But it'll take time for this team to come together, but they have talent. And I think we both assume at number two, they're going to add a quarterback.
Right.
So it's going to be a fun year to watch them, because you have to say the arrow's pointing up, right? Because they have an influx of young talent. They added some veterans, like we talked about, guys like Wagner in the key spots. But it's going to be fun for me to watch this football team, because if you're a Washington fan, this is what you've been waiting for. Right? This is what you've been waiting for. Okay, no disrespect to the former coaches that have been there or players before that. But this is a new start, a fresh start, and now you get to see how it develops.
So there were two veterans they signed in free agency on offense, and I'm curious, as a guy who, again, defensive guy, safety, Zach Ertz and Austin Ekeler, what do they add? What do they have left?
With Zach Ertz, you're talking about someone that has exceptional route traits. Okay, his play speed has declined. Everyone knows that. At this stage of his career, that's normal. You know, every player in the NFL is, you don't get faster when you get older. Everyone understands that. You do not. But you get smarter. Zach Ertz has high-end coverage awareness. What do I mean by that? When the defense has changed the picture post-snap, he knows what it is. Okay, he can find open grass versus zone coverage. He can manipulate leverage or defender. Everyone knows he's good inside the red zone. I think for a young quarterback, someone like Zach Ertz is that player you need on 3rd and 2 to 6. You know, I need to move the chains. Where am I going with the football? I'm going to go to Zach Ertz. Then I know Zach Ertz knows exactly where to go. He's going to read the coverage. He's going to get open for me and make a play for me. And again, you might not see the high-end splash plays from Zach Ertz, but the hidden plays, the one that win football games, is where he can play an impact role. Because look, John, if you get first downs, you win first. Win games. Okay. Yeah, that's all it is. Win games. Austin Ekeler, I kind of like the fit for him for this reason. At this stage of his career, I don't think you want him to have 25, 30 touches a game. Okay. But playing in a backfield rotation with Robinson, okay, as now where you can utilize his pass game traits and our new offense coordinator in Cliff Kingsbury, right? And use his pass game traits. That's going to be the key. And again, we're talking about another, you know, high percentage target for a young quarterback. Okay, I'm going to take the underneath option route to Ekeler in 3rd and 2 to 6 this time. Okay, I'm going to use him more in the screen game. With Austin Ekeler, he can flex outside the formation. We saw it all the time when he was in LA. Now I got a matchup guy in the slot, because now I got a safety on him, or now I got a linebacker on. So both guys, I think, will provide a unique role for a young quarterback in terms of capitalizing on necessary game situations you have to win.
Think they would like to add another tight end in this draft, but I think there's also a need for another receiver at some point. It seems like I'll ask you, what's your take on the tight ends in this class from what you've seen? How deep is it? And because the receivers seem to be pretty deep.
I think the receivers are deep. I mean, we'll start there. I mean, the receivers are deep in terms of different styles of receivers too. Obviously, we know it's the top of the draft. Everyone by now knows it's at the top of the draft, but different types of receivers. If you're looking for a slot receiver later in the draft, someone like Malik Washington out of Virginia is someone I just watched last week, who I really liked, that can win out of the slot, that can create the matchup for you, that's got catch and run ability. Malachi Corley from Western Kentucky, John. This guy after the catch is fun to watch now.
Yeah.
I mean, you talk about someone who has physical traits to their game, that can break arm tackles, run through defenders, but also uses ball carrier vision and space to find cutback lanes. That's someone I look at there as well. A player I really like is Troy Franklin out of Oregon. I don't know where he's going to go, John, but Troy Franklin to me is very elusive in terms of the ability to beat press at the line of scrimmage, to weave defensive backs within the route stem, also can stretch you vertically over the top. And I think he's good after the catch. He's a glider, you know, so a vertical glider that you can add to your offense. Roman Wilson from Michigan. I know you don't want to talk about Michigan, John. Roman Wilson from Michigan is a player that, again, if you're looking at the draft, who, let's be honest, if you put Roman Wilson in Texas offense, Washington's offense last year, the numbers would be a lot different. Ohio State's offense, for example.
Very different.
You know, Roman Wilson played an offense that is very ball control, very run heavy at times under Jim Harbaugh at Michigan. Look, we all know it worked. They won a national title. But in a more pass-heavy system, I think he would have really flourished. He had a great week at the Senior Bowl. I think he tested strongly at the Combine. That's another player there too. Now, the tight end class to me is unique because everyone knows Brock Bowers at the top. I like Sanders from Texas. You got Cade Stover from Ohio State, Theo Johnson from Penn State. Those
Wiley.
Are all
Do you like Wiley?
I do. And those are all players that I think fit in a pro-style system in terms of can play with their hand on the ground, can flex outside, have some matchup traits, but really are, for you, middle-of-the-field targets. And you want something that can stretch the seams. I always use that term for a tight end. Something that can stretch the seams versus three-deep coverage versus man coverage. That's how you create explosive plays. Everyone thinks about explosive plays like you're playing Madden, okay, where you're going to throw it 90 yards down the field. No, an explosive play in the NFL, how we track them, is plus 20 yards.
Right.
Now, that's a seam ball down the middle of the field. That's a big play. You know, now you're in a scoring position because of that. But all those guys there, and I think, it's not a tight end class that has multiple first-rounders. It's just not, okay? But it's a class that has, like we talked about at the top of the show, guys can play 8, 9, 10 years in the league because they can be professional in their approach to the game and also how they're utilized in today's NFL pass games.
So as a guy, again, viewing it through a safety's lens, the way this game has evolved, what would scare you more as a safety, that a good two tight end passing package, like you had Zach Ertz and one of those tight ends, Wiley, you know, Sanders, whomever, with, you know, two receivers or the three receiver set, you know, which one could be more tricky, I guess, for a defensive back? And a lot of that's going to depend on who it is out there. I know that. But, you put good players out there. But which one might be trickier, I guess, for a secondary?
I think it's the 12 personnel, two tight ends in the field, because you're probably going to be in base. And you're in base, and you have to have a tight end that can cover. And not, I mean, a safety that can cover a tight end. But covering a tight end is much different than a slot receiver, much different than a boundary X or a Z, because they're going to be physical. They're going to push off. And you have to have that physical element to match them. And that's a long day of work. It's a long day of work working against a tight end that has the frame that you don't, that has the length that you don't, that has the size of the catch point that you don't. Okay, that puts a lot of stress on your body throughout the course of a football game, and it really forces you to change your technique. And it's interesting you brought it up, because I was looking at the numbers a week and a half ago for something I was writing at ESPN about Cliff Kingsbury. That, you know, the last time he called plays in the National Football League, they're near the top in 12 personnel.
Yeah.
That's what they were. And see, this is the biggest misconception about Cliff Kingsbury, is that people think his offense – it's like a 7-on-7 offense when you have quads bunch.
Right.
They don't do that for four quarters. Now, they have that in their offense. There's to be spread elements, because that's, you know, the background of Cliff Kingsbury as a play caller and a head coach is that spread offense. But he adapted. Again, we talk about how DQ adapted, but look at what Cliff Kingsbury has done in terms of how he's adapted through his years as a head coach in the Arizona Cardinals, how he became more too tight end heavy. Utilize the run game much more. And then you add in those spread elements where you can get the RPOs, you can get the wide receiver screens, you can get overload sets, you can do a lot of different things. But you bring up a good point, because if they're going to run 12 personnel, they're going to have to add another tight end.
So now we get to the quarterback portion of the show. So for people, man, I get a lot of people like, we're talking about quarterbacks. Well, people still want to hear about the quarterbacks, but I am, like everybody else, interested in everything else. That's why I wanted to talk to you, because I knew you would know everything else. But you've also studied the quarterbacks, and you had a lot of good stuff in your Fitz story that you wrote for ESPN and then the 90 traits story. So looking at quarterbacks, what has, you know, first of all, do you assume Chicago is taking Caleb, right?
I do. I think Chicago's going to swing for the fence because they have to.
Right. So number two would be for you.
I think it's Jaden Daniels. That's probably who I'd go with. And look, when I started this process, and I talked with Greg Cosell a lot, and I worked with him in the matchup show, and I have the utmost respect for Greg as someone who evaluates quarterbacks. And we were talking about Drake May and Jaden Daniels. I think over time, I think Jaden Daniels has a higher floor. Okay. And what I mean by that is Jaden Daniels is very efficient as a thrower, very smart with the football. First and second level, highly accurate passer who anticipates and throws with location. Does not have an elite arm. Does not have the arm of Williams or Drake May. I understand that. But again, when he throws with timing and rhythm, which you will in the National Football League, you can take your vertical shots down the field. We saw it on his LSU tape. A very dynamic profile in terms of his athleticism when he gets outside of the pocket. The way he can pick up yards as a scrambler. Now, I don't think you design him on, quarterback design runs at a high rate in the National Football League, because it is a different game. But situationally, you can design him on zone reads, on QB sweep, get him out to the edges. Again, third downs inside the low red zone. That's where I would utilize that as a coach. But he really puts a ton of stress on defenses because of what he can do with his legs outside the pocket. And again, that's not taken away from him as a thrower. as part of his profile now as a quarterback, and he gives you that dual threat ability. And I think that's important in today's NFL. You got to be mobile. You have to have some level of mobility where you can attack the edges on boot, you can escape and extend versus pressure. And he's shown that consistently on his LSU tape. And I still go back to, he played in the SEC conference. Okay. He threw 40 touchdowns and 4 interceptions. Well, what are we talking about here? I mean, that's really, really good, right?
Yes.
Okay. He played against the best competition. Okay. And you and I are both Big Ten guys. We know it's not the same conference. It is not. So when you're watching tape, especially at that position, and you say, well, what would the other quarterbacks do in this league? Right? What would the other quarterbacks do in Jaden Daniels' position against these top-level defenses and top-level speed week in and week out? And that's why I use the term efficient, because I think that's an important trait at the quarterback position. I think he does play with poise. I think he's got the best mechanics coming into the draft of any quarterback in terms of his footwork, tying his upper lower body together, his throwing motion. There's a lot of great things right now about Jaden Daniels. So if you draft him, now it comes down to Washington. How do you coach him? How do you develop him? Putting the pieces around him, what's they're starting to do? Giving him a defense, like we talked about, that is urgent and will take the football away. But in terms of what you see from him on the tape, I put Jaden Daniels right now in front of Drake May. And look, Drake May is a really good prospect. He's probably going to be a top five pick.
Right.
He has the physical tools, 6'4", 6'5", 230-something pounds. Can be designed on you know, situational runs, has the mobility, has the arm talent. There's just some things when you watch the tape on Drake May right now in terms of his pocket poise, his vision at the second and third level that need to develop. And they will, but he does have the tools you want.
So, you know, again, and when you, first of all, in the 90 traits you had for Jaden, most accurate, best vision, best decision maker, best mechanics, best scrambler. So, and that's like, and you had for Drake, best drive thrower, design runner, for JJ McCarthy, I think best pocket mobility, which is key. That's a big key for him. And he's a, you know, I don't want to just say he's a traits guy. That sounds like a cliche for a guy like him, but like, you know, that he does offer those intangibles, et cetera. But for like, for, again, for a secondary guy, when you're facing these quarterbacks, what are the ones that can regulate the defense the most? Who does?
I think it's the top two right now. I think it's Caleb Williams and Jaden Daniels.
And how do they do that? Like, what is it that causes, what does a defense do? Like, what does that mean for, like, just, you know, how does that hurt a defense's ability to maybe do things?
Okay, well, I'll give you an example. Okay, and I always think of this because it just stands out to me. When we were playing in, what was that, 04 in Dallas against Drew Bledsoe, okay? Drew Bledsoe was not, you know, dual threat quarterback. But because of his arm talent, it changed everything we did in the secondary. Okay, we had to play at different depth. You had to be aware of your keys. You had to know when a wide receiver is running a vertical that Drew Bledsoe was going to throw it, whether he's covered or not. And he can throw it over your head at any moment. So mentally, that impacted you. Start with Caleb Williams. You know if he gets outside the pocket and plays outside of structure, that you better be on top of routes. That you better match and plaster in the secondary. That the play is never over, that he will challenge you and make tight window throws because he can from any platform. I think with Jaden Daniels, it's that he sees the field very well. He's going to throw with timing and rhythm, and he can throw at location. Again, accuracy is one thing, okay? Accuracy is the ability to complete the pass. Location separates you, right? And that's what separates you. And if he's got a crosser, he's going to throw a runner's ball on the upfield shoulder, okay? So you know in coverage that if you undercut that ball and you don't make the play, and now it turns into an explosive ball. He's not going to give you a free one in the back hit. You know, as a safety, that if I don't drive top down immediately, that Daniels can fit the ball in an inbreaker because he's going to see it fast. He's going to throw it on top. You know, when he gets outside of the pocket, that you're in trouble, okay? That you're going to have to tackle in the open field. And it also tells you, from a play calling perspective, how much man coverage can we really play? Okay, if we lose contain on Jaden Daniels, we are in deep, deep trouble. That's not just a first down. That's an explosive play.
Right.
So it does impact you. Those two top guys, to me, really, in terms of how it's an impact of coverage structure and what you do from a secondary perspective and your mental approach to the game, the top two to me change that the most. And look, again, no disrespect to the other quarterbacks. We just talked about Drake May. Drake May has some of those tools as well. And with JJ, JJ to me is the intangibles.
Yeah.
You know, what he brings to the huddle, what he can do as a repetitive thrower from inside that pocket. The mobility to find space and reset his throwing window. A lot of great things with J.J. McCarthy. And as you know, before, I've coached against J.J. at the high school level. Mm-hmm. We have a team camp every summer down at Illinois Wesleyan University. And we'd always be down there with Nazareth. And I know, as a secondary coach, that he would make every throw, no matter what coverage I put my defense backs in, when he was 16 and 17 years old. So you start to see at the younger age what level these players really are at. And now you're talking about them being first round draft picks. Obviously, they're going to stand out, but it's a really strong quarterback class. And I think Washington's in a great, great position because, like we assume, Caleb Williams is going to go number one of the Bears. And then it's going to come down to their coaching staff, their scouting department, the general manager in terms of what they're looking for in a quarterback, because you and I both know this, John. What we see on tape does not come close to telling the whole story of that position. Much different than drafting a safety. Okay, yeah. These guys have to be ultimate leaders. They have to be. They have to absolutely love football and everything about it. They have to be able to handle more adversity than anyone on the team day in and day out. They have to have a physical element to them. They're going to get hit. They're going to get hit a lot on Sundays. And they have to make throws in critical moments of the games to win football games for their team. So there's so much more that goes into it when you're studying the character of these young quarterbacks. You're studying the mental makeup of these young quarterbacks and how they operate on game day.
And, you know, to me, there's something with each of these guys that I could see, okay, I see why they like this guy and why they took this guy. Some maybe more than others, but certainly with each three, I can see that. Matt, I got about a minute left, so I really appreciate you coming on. And it's always been good to talk to you over the years from when I covered you to now and watching you rise, because you're one of the smarter guys that I've ever covered. So thanks a lot, man.
Well, John, I know you got a minute left, and I just got to put this out real quick. I got to thank you. My wife and I were talking about it last night. My first job, when I was actually done playing football, I was going to graduate school at DePaul University here in Chicago, was working for you at the Washington Examiner.
That's right. And it was great because it meant that I would get your insight before anybody else. So I always liked that, but it was all because I thought your insight was always terrific, and it still is. And that's why I like having you on. And it's why you're a very, very busy man. Check out his stuff on ESPN Plus, because it's really good stuff for the draft and to get you ready. Thanks, Matt.
Thank you, John.
That's it for this episode. Thanks to Matt for joining me, and thank you, as always, for tuning in. Don't forget, I'll be back on Thursday. I have another podcast out Thursday morning, but I'll also be back Thursday night at 7:30 Eastern Time. Graham Weinstein, the voice of the Commanders, as we do a live stream show. Join us then. Bring your draft questions. I'll talk to you next time.